Shopride's Can-Can. Over 50 years of endless deals.
Now, Shopride does the Can-Can. Selling lots on brands on everything in cans. Today is great to save some cash. So come to Shopride's Can-Can. Can-Can. You save much more on every brand. Can-Can.
Find endless deals at Shopride's Can-Can sale. Going on now. You can't miss it.
One of the best parts of role-playing games is character creation process. Do you guys agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whether you want to be a holy knight, an edgy rogue, a dark necromancer, the game is always better with more options.
Yes.
More class.
Those of us here at the Crit Academy absolutely love delving into complex designs for new class options. After creating dozens of best-selling products, we've learned what makes each one balanced, fun, and engaging to play. We're going to be talking about the Sawbones Rogue today. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy, episode 297.
Yeah.
We're almost to 300, you guys. I am the host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon.
And we hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next tabletop adventure.
Oh, shit.
Before we get into today's main topic, you guys, there is a huge
turd in the bowl.
Turd in the bowl, I guess. As many of you know, there's been a lot of talk of Wizards of the Coast and the new OGL.
I'm sorry, this is probably like your thousandth time hearing that word.
Now, while this may not necessarily affect a bunch of players directly, it's going to it is affecting the community at large. The leaked document is not good for creators, and of course, WotC's a little too late response does little to reassure small creators like us. So first, we should like to point out that the current OGL is what allows us to be D&D content creators and was created with the idea that it will exist forever and cannot be revoked, right? Now, WotC themselves have said as much in the past as have those that created the original document. Now, we waited to make an official statement because
we just want to make sure we hit all the information.
Yeah, I mean, sure, that's really important. And we wanted to verify that all the documents were from trustworthy sources. Now, at this point, WotC's own official statement has verified the authenticity of the leak, even though they claimed it's a draft version with a contract attached.
For people to sign.
Right. The current OGL fits on one page. If you have a third-party book, whether it's from us, another group, or Cobalt Press, you'll find that document either in the front or in the back. Revoking the current OGL meaning creators are no longer able to use it to create any new content for this for the current version of the OGL. Now, giving WotC the right to use any of the content that you create using the new OGL any way they see fit without compensating you in any way or even giving you credit. So they could take your product, publish it themselves, not pay you a penny.
Sounds to me like legal theft.
And never even credit you. And that's not even the most of it. You know, mandatory reporting of not only your sales numbers, but the list of all your products and the prices that you sell them for. This would make it easy for them to see whose content is selling the most and will make it easier for them to choose what to take and publish as their own. Now, it also prevents you from pursuing legal action against them for any reason. It also gives Wizards of the Coast the right to change the new OGL at any time with only 30 days' notice.
That's fucked up.
Isn't it?
That's the worst one.
This could mean that if you run a Kickstarter like we do, And they suddenly change the rules before your product is published, you can now owe them a huge chunk of money. And that is probably not part of your budget. So, and even worse, maybe you now can't even publish the book because the change took so much of your money, you don't have enough under this license.
How shitty would that be? You got all these backers, right? And then you have to send out an email saying, sorry, we can't print your book because Watsi's greedy.
Yeah. So, and Watsi has now released an official response that kind of backpedals on some of it. However, admitting it was even there in the begin with is a huge red flag for small people like us. Many small creators have built their business on the promises of the current OGL that's lasted several decades and that it would always be valid and there for us. Even if the newer versions were created, that's very key, right? It indicated they could update it, and we could choose to use the older one if we want. You could just ignore it, but that's not what this new one did.
That's what new one claims, anyway.
Yes. Now, by even attempting to revoke the current OGL, they have basically lost all the trust of the community, including us here at Crit Academy. Now,
they didn't think we were going to do anything, and everyone did.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot to it, but I'm not going to bore everyone with all the details. I just want you guys to know where we kind of stand. At this point, Crit Academy can no longer depend on Wizards of the Coast OGL to create content, which sucks. We have a couple of 5e projects already in production that we hope will be available to follow through on, and depending on the official new OGL ends up being, we'll see. We have a couple of other projects in the works that we will be converting to a system agnostic before they release. If you don't know what that is, it means it doesn't matter which fantasy RPG you play. It's still a powerful book and resource, much like a lot of the content we review. Now, moving forward, that in the short term, we will be focusing on system agnostic content for all new publishing projects. In the long term, we are hoping projects such as Orc from Paizo, which is a open RPG creative license, and by the Black Flag Initiative by Cobalt Press, which is a new RPG they're putting out that'll be based on the ORC.
Har! Fucking Cobalt Press.
Will allow us to continue to create inspirational content for our supporters and fans under this new system.
And I do want to point out, too, that they are by no means the only publishers who are creating their own system.
God, yes, and that's gonna shatter us for a little while, I think.
Yeah.
Until one, like Highlander, until they're all slitting each other's heads off and one rises to the top of the mountain, that's kind of where we're going to be at. But I think that that gives us some good opportunity, right, to expand our horizon. So our podcast will actually be adapting to kind of focus on a mix of system agnostic content, a variety of RPGs and tabletop games, and still including 5e content from small creators who deserve to be supported.
It's still a good game, and we still enjoy that game. But we want to, as always, feature content we think is good that's just not from first parties.
Yeah, and that's kind of where that's at right now. There are so many games out there, and I know Ian's played more than all of us, right? Yeah. I know he's got a bunch he's got that he hasn't played yet.
It's like, I'm gonna play this game. Me, after I bought it, I'll probably only ever play this if I brought it myself.
So it's actually kind of exciting, right?
Yeah.
Because this means we'll be able to play games and share our details with you. So we will try and focus on not only what makes these games great on their own, but how these ideas and concepts can be implemented in the games in your games and at your tables. So we're super excited for that. Now, our Patreon page is still going to include 5e content for the time being, but we will be transitioning over time to a more system agnostic content there as well. And our goal is to continue to bring inspiration to your games, no matter what system you choose to run at your table. Now, we hope you guys all understand why we had to make this decision as a business. We have to look out for our future and protect the work and content that we spend so much time making. and we look forward to expanding our RPG knowledge and hearing from all of you about the game, what games you love the most. That was way longer than it was supposed to be, but it was very important. So how about we get into it? Today's main topic, you guys, is the Sawbones Rogue. If you haven't picked up our Extraordinary Expeditions book and or the new Extraordinary Player Options, inside of it contains, what did you call the rogue?
A harmacist.
A harmacist, right? So overall, actually, do you want to touch on how you came up with that in the overall archetype design?
Well, I mean, I pulled the term from like support characters in various games that people play as a DPS, but basically the harmacist is a rogue who has medical skills.
Yes. Instead of a pharmacist, you get it? You look confused.
Yes. Is this more along the lines of like, I'm going to sneak attack, but I'm going to specifically go for that Achilles right there?
Some of it. Not all of it.
Because you have medical knowledge, so you know where to stab.
Yeah, right? I know your artery is here. So if you're looking for a unique healing experience, because let's be honest, the reason healers are always so hard to find is what?
They're not fun.
Boring. Yeah, they're boring. Well, I think we were very successful in finding a way to make a stabby character balanced and still put out a good amount of damage. Obviously, it's not going to push out like the assassin can, but it's still pretty high damage with the sneak attack and stuff. So if you're looking for that unique non-magical class, then man, the extraordinary player option has exactly what you're looking for. So
I'm a healer, but...
sneaky healer sounds really interesting. I'll heal you, but you'll never know. I didn't even think about that. So,
like Anna from Overwatch.
I suddenly feel better, but I don't know why.
All right, so we all know that humanoid bodies are very complex. You know, few fully understand the intricate networks that allow a body to function. Well, luckily, there are a few out there that study these complex features. So this is a subclass to the rogue that you pick up as your archetype at third level. So what do you think the first core abilities we're going to give them is as soon as they pick up this archetype?
Sneak heal.
Medicine.
Medicine, right? Oh, okay. Sneak heal's a good answer, though. I'll give you credit for that one. So they're going to give them the herbalism kit, and you're going to give them the medicine skill proficiency. Because you're going to be a practitioner of the healing arts, then that's going to be in perfect detail. And what's interesting about it is the way we were able to tie that kind of in to the core design of the class and the mechanics. So the very first ability you get after you get the proficiency bonuses is called the surgical precision. And I really like this overall concept. Do you want to touch on it a little bit, Ian?
Why? Starting at third level, your skills with surgical tools and anatomy has made your attacks that much more deadly. What weapon attacks against humanoid creatures with daggers and darts score critical hits at 19 and 20.
Guess what? The champion isn't the only one that gets bigger hits.
Yep.
Now, this, for a rogue, is a huge boon.
Yep.
But this boon is offset by the fact you don't get very many other damage-dealing buff abilities other than what your rogue's default toolkit is. What do you guys think about this?
It definitely makes sense thematically. And it, like you said, it kind of keeps them in the fight in terms of damage.
I like the thought of darts because you can reflare them as like little scalpels.
Yes.
Or
absolutely.
Or syringes.
Ooh, syringes. It's not coated in poison. It's a syringe filled with poison that you're throwing and injecting in people.
Yeah.
What was that?
Harmacist. Also, your drug dealer.
You're addicted to heroin.
Dealing drugs.
So because I keep wanting to say harmacist. Thanks, asshole. Because the Sawbones doesn't get a lot of damage-increasing abilities, this was kind of a good staple for the players to want to pick it up
and you get
at the early level.
And you get it right away. And if you manage to basically create a dual-wielding build for the rogue, they can double down on this.
Oh, yeah. double down. I love it. And that's kind of the core right there. But obviously, we're going Sawbones, we're going Rogue, we're healing. So this also is interesting because is there any other non-magical healers?
Not that good. Yes, actually, the monk.
The monk, yes, the chiropractor monk. So they use ki, right?
Yeah.
Or just like bending your back. Anyway, so this is another kind of area that isn't really tapped into by the company who shall not be named. So we're going to give him another ability at third level, Brandon.
Way of Mercy Monk.
The Way of Mercy Monk. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Painful Fist or Healing
Touches.
So we're going to give him the Herbal Remedy. Now, what is an Herbal Remedy? Well, at third level, you're able to create a common healing agent. During a short or long rest, you can create herbal poultice mixtures using your herbalism kit. Now, you can create a number of doses equal to your proficiency bonus. The herbal remedies lose their power after 24 hours of being created. So you can't stockpile them. And they're but additionally...
Oh, a chiropractor. Okay.
A chiropractor? A key. I see what you did there.
I thought it was an L at first because of the way it was.
Yeah. Additionally, oh, when you get this at, you level up, it gets a little stronger. It is worth noting that an herbal poultice functions in a little bit different ways from a more traditional healing option. So the first thing you can do is you can create an herbal antitoxin. Mm-hmm. As part of your poultice, right, which basically allows them to grant advantage to anybody that drinks it against saving poison and disease for 1 hour. So if you know you're going into, like, a swampy area, you can kind of create some of these in advance and buff up your team to protect against the swamp trolls. What's on your mind, B?
I was thinking of Goodberry. That's what it reminds me of.
Sure. Goodberry, yeah.
Because
without spellcasting.
You produce that. This is spellcasting though. We produce one that lasts for 24 hours and so on.
Yeah. So it's worth noting that we have a multitude of the different poultices, a couple of different ones. Now we talked about the first one. Now we've got the herbal poultice. This is the one that's going to probably be used the most often.
Yum.
As an action, you can use a single dose of the poultice to basically tend to wounds on a creature. This includes restoring hit points equal to your level plus your proficiency bonus. The creatures can't regain hit points from this until they finish a short or long rest again.
No, your level or its level?
Your level.
Your level. So the higher level you are, the more effective you are at making a poultice.
Oh, so that's a typo. Okay.
Yes.
And just for clarification, your character's level or your rogue level?
I'm pretty sure it says character level.
Okay.
Not rogue level.
I just want to clarify.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah, it is.
So, but it is still limited by how frequently you can regain the benefits.
Sure.
Which was necessary to keep it in line with spellcasters, right?
Yeah. And now, I'm not going to lie, reading through this archetype, I kept on thinking about the duct tape mage meme that I see pop up. Like some guy died on the ground. Dude, you going to heal me?
Get on the table.
He has unrolling duct tape.
Oh, that's hilarious. Do you want to tell us about the next one? This is the one I think that got the most positive feedback from the playtesters.
It's called the Potent Potion of Healing. This is pretty neat. You mix herbs with your herbalism kit and expending 50 gold pieces worth of materials. You can create a single potent potion of healing. A creature who drinks the magical red and green fluid regains a number of hit points equal to 2d4 plus double your proficiency bonus. So it's like a regular healing potion, but
better.
Not the plus two.
Yeah, because it starts off at plus two. Yeah. It basically allows you to create potions. It still costs as much because it has to say balance, but because you have a natural knack, you actually make them better.
Yep.
Even the crappy ones become better.
And it takes an action to administer it.
But what we struggled with and what really makes us cool is that 50 gold becomes less of a cost the higher level you get.
Yeah.
So even when it's only 2d4 plus 6, that's still a boon even at higher levels. So now, before we move into the next ability, what is your guys' overall thoughts of this core mechanic of the Sawbones that you can find inside our Extraordinary Expeditions book or our Extraordinary player options?
I do think you will see the most mileage out of this at lower levels, but on the flip side, too, that's where most games are anyway, so...
That's a fair point.
And I'm not saying that this will be useless at higher levels, because it will, especially in the middle of, like, combat, potentially, or in between combat, keep players up or get them back on their feet.
Yeah.
And there's definitely something to be said about that.
Absolutely. What about you, B?
I would want to try this. It looks fun. It sounds fun. I'm just imagining what it would feel like to drop a sneak attack with the abilities from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah? I mean, that's where the most of the damage comes from this.
I'm not going to lie. A snarky part of me is going, hey, assassin, rogue, I do what you do, but better.
Anything you can do, I can do better. No, you can't. Yes, I can. You're already dead.
You are already dead.
You didn't even know. So what I really liked about designing and playing this was that it gets rid of the issue that people have with playing a healer. Sure, you're not going to put out the most damage, but critting more often, even if it's with a dart or a dagger, is still a very high damage per round.
Especially if you pulled off with a sneak attack.
Yes. Well, and if you're dual wielding, as you mentioned earlier,
yep,
you basically are doubling the amount of chances you're going to be able to get the sneak attack.
Yep.
Right? And the crit range is doubled. So it definitely is an interesting mechanic. How do you think it blends with some of the other core rogue abilities? I don't have the core rogue abilities up there. You're going to have to.
Yeah, that kind of makes it.
cunning dodge, I think it was.
Cunning action.
Yep.
Cunning action. Evasion.
A more evasive healer that the enemies might target, but some of their abilities might keep them in the fight.
Yes, that's actually, I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly the response I was looking for, because one of the risks of being a healer typically is they're soft and squishy. Cleric, paladin no longer kind of fit in that line.
I mean, rogues are still kind of squishy compared to the martial classes, and they don't necessarily want to be caught in the open, but they have ability at least to work around that.
Yeah.
That would be neat, Andrew, but this one can only crit on 19 or 20 with daggers and darts.
Yes. Let's make sure that's clear. It's only crit range only applies to darts and daggers. So no more, you know, big giant rapier in the face. So, I mean, you can, but you lose that benefit. So
that's
why
right.
would you? All right. So going out to 9th level, they actually get their medical examination ability. So if they spend at least 1 minute interacting or observing another character outside of combat, they can learn information about its anatomy. So the GM basically can tell you up to 2 pieces of information about that creature. Does this sound familiar?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
The fighter ability.
It's the fighter ability that people say is worthless. We made it not worthless. So the GM can reveal the strength and 2 pieces of information about the creature's strength and weaknesses of your choice. So that's immunity, resistance, and vulnerabilities right out the gate. So this rewards what type of play?
The observant one, or those who are cautious, or those who plan ahead.
Yes. What do you think about that, B?
That's awesome. I'm just thinking of how many times is going to help my players in trying to figure out something about the big bads, because when I run monsters, I've actually had a player who's sitting outside by the sidelines with the monster manual, and he's just kind of like flipping the pages. I finally noticed it, and it's like, what are you doing? It's like, your monsters don't seem accurate. It's like, that's because I'm not using any of the monsters in the monster manual. I give them my own attributes because I know you're looking for them.
See, that's
it's like, well, I don't know what it's weak against. Good, you're not supposed to.
I do also encourage that GMs, if you're not already doing this, make sure that players do get the opportunities to get these pieces of information through research or interaction with NPCs, etc. So this is a pretty interesting ability, right?
Yeah.
It really fits that rogue theme about, well, let me go observe, see what I can learn from them, you know, and enhances the potential reward by being able to know a vulnerability is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing worse than fighting a monster and find out it's immune to something. That's what all your spell slots you took for that day or whatever, right? That you prepared.
You can totally flavor it as this little thing that fits over your ear and your eye, and it goes do 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 when you're reading.
What's the scouter say, Vegeta?
It's over 9,000.
Yeah. All right. So it is worth noting that at the GM's discretion, you might also realize you know a piece of interesting lore just by observing them. So. That's up to the GM, and that always has been, right?
Yep.
So one of the next abilities is study anatomy. Do you want to talk a little bit about this, Ian?
Yep, and you get this at 13th level. During a long rest, you can research and study a specific type of creature. and you choose from one of the following creature types from the this very long list, you have a, you have advantage on medicine and nature checks related to that chosen creature type. And then you can now use your surgical persistent features against said chosen type. And additionally, you can use your cunning action to use an anti-toxin, healer's kit, or potion of healing. Which...
There it is.
Yep. And this feature lasts until you use it again during a long rest.
Now, the company that shall not be named insists you can't use potions as a...
Jermaine Crawford.
Yeah, as... Well, whatever. He still works for them.
Yep.
Anyway, it says you can't use potions because they're magical as a bonus, as part of your thieves. The thieves... Yep. What is that ability? Fast hands.
Yeah.
I said F it. At 13th level, yes, you can. Now, the feature does last until you use it again. During a long rest. So, you basically are opening up a medical book and looking through it to learn about a creature specifically for the immediate access and bonuses that come with it.
Not going to lie, my first reaction was, when I thought about this, was... Back in the webcomic Dr. McNinja, when the main character yelled at one time to his dad, "Hit him in the left butt cheek! That's his weakness!"
What?
Yeah. But then I realized, wait, that's actually a thing. Especially if you, because deer hunters know, if you actually shoot a deer in the butt, that's actually one of the best places you can actually hit shoot them.
Because it can't jump?
No, because there's a main artery there. They'll bleed out fast.
Okay.
No.
So, is that saying, like, if my rogue sits down and they're reading through his book, right? And they learn about kobolds. Okay, yep. So now they can do this with kobolds. But the next time they look through, it's like, okay, we just fought a bunch of kobolds. Let's see. How about some basilisks? Okay, basilisks. Do you just
about the kobolds? It's more like preparing a spell, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have to keep it in your forefront. Because while they learn it, a general doctor versus a very specific doctor, right? A specific specialist knows everything about that, but a general constantly has to flip to remember about specific details. Plus, it's a balancing mechanic. Stop judging me.
Okay. Judge.
And specialists make more money.
That's true. All right. We all know how often we get to capstone abilities.
Never.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. I want to design an RPG, and it's not going to take years to get to the level cap. all right, so we had to give a really appropriate ability for the capstone for the Sawbones Rogue. Now, we did say, yes, they're healers first, blah, 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 blah. But
that just means they know how to hurt you.
Yes. We would be remiss if we didn't give them something that allowed them to take advantage of all that medical knowledge. Brandon, do you want to tell us about bloodletting?
Bloodletting. At 17th level, you've mastered the complexity of the anatomy and have learned this to spot a target's weakness with intense scrutiny.
Oh, I'm watching
shit.
You.
Shit. This allows you to take advantage of their vital areas to deliver a fatal blow.
Oh, shit.
Choose a creature that you can see within 30 feet of you. As a bonus action, you can make a DC 13 wisdom medicine check.
18.
That's definitely 18.
I said 13 tonight. Yeah, 18. I'm going blind. Sorry. On a success for the next minute. It's 10 rounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't get too excited.
Something's jiggling.
on
a hit with a melee weapon, the creature instantly dies. What the fuck? Oh, if they have less than 60 hit points. Holy shit! Regardless of your damage roll, on a failure, the creature becomes immune to this feature for 24 hours. No, that's pretty cool. Constructs are immune to this feature.
Because they don't have vital components.
Can we also point out the fact that rogues get double proficiency with their skills?
Yes.
And at a certain point, they can't roll below a 10?
Yes. That's why that got dropped more than once. It started off almost equal to power word kill.
Yeah.
And needed to be dropped significantly.
In some ways, it seems similar to me to the way of the open hands monks.
Which mechanic?
Quivering palm.
They get the one I get at 5?
No.
Or is that the death one where they can just stab, the punch one, somebody and then they can die when
like
they decide? 48
points of damage.
Yeah. No, this one's definitely...
So my point is, there's a precedent for something like this.
Well, yeah, and the power word kill spell does this, but better.
Yeah.
Of course, that's like a 9th level
spell.
It's
also not the proper definition for bloodletting.
Oh. Anyway.
Bloodletting is far more disturbing.
I don't need to know. Thank you.
So, audience, bloodletting is the
medieval
act.
No, shut up. I wrote
of...
a word and then looked for a cool bitchin' synonym, okay?
Oh, God. It's the medieval act of draining your bad blood when you're diseased in the hopes that your new blood will generate new. So people would end up killing themselves because they were draining their blood.
Thanks for that.
Trying to heal themselves.
That's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this is potent. It is strong. It does require a successful check. Wisdom every time they do it. It does consume a bonus action. It does have a requirement. Mind you, at 17th level, do you know how hard a sneak attack crit can do?
It hurts.
It basically is just an I win button for weak monsters. But it's appropriate.
If I were disturbed.
All right. Overall, what do your guys think about the Sawbones Rogue from Extraordinary Expeditions / Extraordinary Player Options that you can pick up now and support a small content creator instead of the company that shall not be named?
One of the strength of the Rogue class is its utility, and I think this is an archetype that taps into that.
Yep. Oh, Andrew has a good question. Do I think that first-time GM should allow content from our book? Or should they wait until they have a better handle on it? Players' abilities and options is not your responsibility most of the time. So there's no problem from the player options perspective.
Yeah.
You're not expected to know everything all the time.
And we are all DMs anyway, and we'll be the first to admit we don't know everything.
Yeah. And these are – our adventure book, for instance, is designed for simplicity, so you don't need to be an expert. And honestly, even if you are an expert or a new person, you're going to find value in the books. They're not going to be any more complex than anything else you might find or buy, I guess.
Yeah.
So I would say I wouldn't restrict yourself from third-party content just because you don't know everything or you're new.
Say I've been DMing for 6 years and I'm still asking my players what the hell that is. Like I have a player doing a Grave Cleric, first time I've ever seen him. I have no idea what comes with it. So I'm constantly asking him, it's like, oh, okay, what can they do again?
Because that's the thing, is we can't With the exception of weirdos like me and Ian, we can't find the time to – most people can't find the time to read through all that content. I only read through it because I have a show about it and I write about it. But even then, I forget it immediately after I read it.
Yep.
He remembers most of it.
Which is
ish.
Bizarre.
So,
and I played official society games or Adventure League where even the DMs don't seem to know everything.
Yeah, so – get what you want. If support your creators, learn the stuff as you go, and have fun. That's all we want. And if you do find that it's overwhelming, then take your time and get acclimated until you feel comfortable taking that step. But
yeah.
I'm very much of the jump in the pool head first, whether there's water or not. So,
and that's how you broke your ankle. No.
Yes. So you do you, bro.
And this is unbiased. Because even if you're a new GM, you still don't know what all the other classes are.
Yeah.
So regardless.
I mean, shoot, when I ran a monk at Jasper's Game Day when we went there, I even had the Dungeon Master going, you can do that?
Oh, I'll never forget where you kicked that guy off and he went splat
off
the tower.
Yeah.
The Dampier? Apparently they can, like, Misty Step or something like that?
No.
No, I don't think they can.
Maybe it's a warlock feat.
All right. So, there is one. All right. So, I think that'll do it for our main topic today. We get to read content? Well, when I'm on the toilet.
That's lovely.
That's the best time to read. That or when I'm in a bath. Did I just lose man cred for admitting that I love baths?
No.
I love a bath.
Nothing better than
I got
the
bath bombs and shit. It's awesome.
With the bath bombs and candles. Maybe some Kenny G.
My wife rolled a nat 20 on Awesome Wives when she bought me a big thing of bath bombs.
Yeah.
Like, who does that for their husband? And he's like, I gotta go take a bath now.
Andrew asks, will we allow the Sawbones Clash of Classes if it ever comes back?
Of course. If it ever comes back. We'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, it was fun, but man, it was a lot of logistics behind the scenes on that one.
Yeah, he had a lot of work to do.
He did a lot of work. Oh my God.
So... before we move on to our honor tips and tricks, I want to take a moment to let everyone know that
it is now.
We have a new project coming up soon. Our Kickstarter for Alex's Bombastic Oddities launches February 21st for any tabletop RPG. Very so nice. Watch out for our social, watch on our social medias, our email updates, all that stuff. Please help support that. There's a lot of uncertainty right now, so we can use all the help we can get making sure that this is successful. So, if you don't know, we've had Alex Baum, a very popular influencer in the tabletop RPG industry. Been on the show several times. Woman's hilarious, runs my Games of Initiative and Intrigue. And she has these collection of lore and story that she built over years, and it is phenomenal. If you haven't watched the Initiative and Intrigue games, go back and watch them. You can find them on the on her YouTube at youtube.com/AlexBaum. And we will. She shares that knowledge of her gods. If you don't know who Boozy is, you're missing out. Best damn deity in any game I've ever been in. He's fun. He's a douche and loves trickery, just like me. It's great. But it's a collection of fantastic gods, new races. The Iote, I think, is how it's pronounced. I see it in my mind, but I never know if I'm saying it right. The Iote, which are kind of a mix of. Like the Genasi, right? They're half elementals. And those are really fun. They have unique powers, unique abilities. It's going to be great. But what's really interesting is all the oddities. She has a vast list of just random things you can generate from these tables to throw into your D&D games. And they are so much fun and ridiculous. So definitely check it out. Consider becoming a backer.
And now, what you've all been waiting for. Our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We have a new monster, the Zombie Plaguebringer. Before I even talk about it, what do you think it is?
A rotting zombie corpse that spews disease.
Oh, that's a really good guess. What about you, B? Do you got a guess?
That's my thought. It's a Zombie Plaguebringer.
What if I told you that
wait, that could be a person who is bringing on a plague of zombies.
Okay, I can see that.
But that's just a different perspective, so I don't know.
Alright, so this little bastard has corpse explosion. When you kill it, it just explodes and spews a vile decaying disease onto the creatures within 10 feet of it when it dies. So yes, I smashed it! What is that smell? is going to be the surprise your characters aren't expecting. We started with the mummy to get a nice CR3. They must make a con save or get this rotting disease that, if they die, turns them into a plague bringer themselves.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about this concept?
I just had flashbacks to when I was playing Dragon Age, the spell Virulent Walking Bomb.
I don't remember that one.
It's in the tabletop RPG at the very least. But the Walking Bomb spell is you basically infect your opponent's blood with a spiritual disease, and if they die from the damage, because it does ongoing damage, mm-hmm. they explode. And Virulent awesome. Walking Bomb basically does that, but it spreads.
That's cool.
So this slowly turns players into one?
Yes.
Yep.
So it's worth noting that it requires a successful DC 18 wisdom medicine check or a lesser restoration healing spell to cure it. So you'll eventually get it, but you'll probably die. It deals damage every round.
Yep.
And if it kills somebody, they're boned. They're boned. Get it? They become zombies.
So how long does this last?
Until it's removed.
So they're going to take 2d6 poison damage every 6 seconds until I get to the next town?
They ain't gonna make it to the next town. That's the point. Either you have the lesser restoration spell, you succeed on a wisdom check frantically, or
for Sierra
Phil
3?
Gets it.
That's so sad.
I know. Not for me. I think it's great. You're an asshole. Everyone's gonna be like, we should have took the wisdom medicine check skill, because nobody ever takes that, right? Andrew says something interesting here. You want to drive your players nuts? Give them a weapon of warning and make it a broken magic so that it goes off sometimes when there's no danger. That's glorious. Overall, it's a pretty fun monster. I can see it being fitting right into any
That's funny.
Area that you want to go viral. Like our show. Help us go viral. Share this shit. All right, that'll do it for our monster, nice. The Plague Bringer's zombie.
Yeah.
I'll do the encounter. It's called Murky Depths. As the party wades through the murky black waters of the marsh, they suddenly hear a loud, guttural noise. As they look around for the source, they see a group of 2d4 plus 2 giant crocodiles emerging. What the fuck? from the water, their eyes locked on the party. The crocodiles are fiercely territorial and will attack anyone who intrudes on their territory.
Give us a dinosaur noise. Oh, that's good.
This sounds more like a loogie. Just as the party is about to engage the giant crocodiles, they hear a loud splashing noise behind them. They turn to see a 20-foot-long crocodile, twice the size of the others, charging at them from the rear. Dush, 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 dush. This crocodile is a rare, ancient beast known as a gargantuan crocodile.
Ooh.
And is even more dangerous than the giant crocodile. Well, no shit. God. The party will have to fight their way through the giant crocodiles and the gargantuan crocodile if they want to continue through the marsh.
Yeah.
That's pretty straightforward.
So,
the murky water and uneven ground of the swamp makes it difficult for the characters to move and fight effectively.
Ouch.
You should design, like... Oh, yeah. Each character speed is halved.
I should design encounters? Is that what you said?
No, you design, like, the kind of encounter is, like, just screw, fuck my players.
That's true.
Each character speed is halved, and they have disadvantage on dexterity checks and saving throws.
Ouch.
That sucks. If they manage to defeat the crocodiles, they can continue on their way. But yeah. They should be careful, as they may encounter more dangerous creatures in the treacherous swamp.
When I run counters like this, I like the monster to be unkillable. You can kill all the little ones, but the big one is something that requires you to kind of get clever about fighting. Maybe banishment, bastard. or just running away in general while you're trying to fight. So you got kind of this battle chase thing going on, right? What do you guys think about that?
So I do have one quick question. What step like are we using for the gargantuan crocodile?
A gargantuan creature. I would say purple worm. I mean, whatever you want.
Okay.
I didn't have one in mind. I just say make a giant one.
Take the giant crocodile and beef its numbers up by two.
Sure.
You would need more than that, but yeah. So the idea behind that is that you're fighting all these little ones, you're running through mucky waters, this thing is chasing you, and you can't beat it by just swinging a sword, right? You need to find a way to delay it. Yeah. So.
Just a trash stack.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I would agree with that. That could work.
Just so every time someone uses magic on him, it just reflects back and hits him.
Pew! Fireball! All right. Oh, shit! Fireball! That didn't work the first time. I thought it might work the second time. All right, that'll do it for our encounter. Our magic item is...
the Black Dragon Acid Scale Mail.
That's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. And it's rare, and it requires attunement. And this shimmering black scale mail is made from the scales of a black dragon. Treated with a special asset that gives the armor its dark hue, and a really nice glimmering sheen, in my personal opinion. The scales are infused with the dragon's innate magical ability to breathe acid, and they grant this ability to the armor's wearer. While they're wearing this armor, they can use an action to exhale a 15-foot cone of acid.
Oh, okay.
Yep, and each creature must make a dex saving throw, taking 3d6 acid on a failed save, or half as much on a success. The acid damage obviously has passed and dissolves organic matter it touches. And the armor has an AC of 16 and is immune to acid damage, or rather makes the wearer immune to acid damage. That's a great clarification.
That's a terrible writing. Somebody should fire Justin.
Yep. And they also grant fire resistance to the wearer. And the armor has 3 charges, and it regains 1d3 at dawn. And you can use your action to expend 1 charge and release, well, a 15-foot cone of acid as mentioned above.
Clearly, I left in some of my notes when I was just drafting it.
Hopefully, you updated it for the blog.
The beginning, because it sounded like it was worded like the armor was breathing acid, not the user.
That sounds way cooler.
it's like you do that thing like what's was it Cyrax or Sector? One of them, they'd open their chest and there's a bomb would fall out or a missile would shoot.
Cyrax does that, I think. Sector shoots the rockets.
Sector's he's the red one, right?
Yeah, he shoots the rockets. The other one drops the bombs. Mortal Kombat for old people.
Or the armor can Or this armor lets you do the cone by doing a Hadouken.
Oh, I love that.
My chest plate has a mouth that opens on its own.
That is way cooler. We're going with that. I like this item. Revised immediately.
Good job, Kiwi.
The armor definitely is the thing releasing the gout of flame.
Like the Gyver. Acid.
What did I say?
Flame.
You know what? Stop talking to me. You hurt my feelings making
it your party. Isn't
all right, so.
I'll tell you what the party's not.
Safe.
You know what I'm envisioning? Like Iron Man, right? He's got that little chest blaster thing, right?
Lena beam, yeah.
Anybody else find it that he knows what that's called? I've never heard it called that. Is that like in the comics?
Yeah.
Because they definitely never call that in the show.
Ian knows everything.
I wouldn't say he knows everything.
Just more than you would think.
You know, no, the wife and I
feel like he's one of those people that has those little calendars and it gives him a useless fact about nerds.
The wife and I were in Barnes & Noble the other day, and she's like, I want this board game. It's huge. I've seen it before. I want to play it. I don't know how to play it. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Ian does.
What game?
I can't remember what it's called. It's something about zombies in a giant house.
Oh, House on the Haunted Hill?
Not that one, no.
Okay. Zombie side? No, that's not it.
She does want that one.
All right, so moving on. Our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast is balance and reward.
Yeah.
Bet you guys can see what's coming here. Have a good balance of challenge and reward in your game. I actually see people suck at this sometimes. Make sure that I'm actually guilty of this, honestly.
I think every DM's guilty of this at some point.
Make sure that the players are consistently making progress, but also make sure that they are faced with meaningful challenges that test their skills. It doesn't make for fun if, A, they're steamrolling everything, though some people will find that fun. Children especially.
Yep.
But also that the challenges actually have weight, right? Good balance of the story and the challenges and the rewards helps keep the game interesting and engaging for the players. Everyone loves loot. They love boons. They love people worshiping them in the game. They love that stuff. So if the challenges are too difficult and there's little reward for the player's effort, they may become frustrated and kind of lose interest. So you got to be careful. Yep. Like, who wants to be like, we conquered a mighty dragon? What'd you get? I got a bag of holding.
I got a rock.
It's black and covered in acid.
It keeps tigers away. That's bullshit. You see any tigers around?
I like that. So on the other hand, though, if the challenge is too easy and the rewards are too generous, the game may become boring and feel too easy.
Yep.
Kind of what I was saying. So having a good balance is important to reward that sense of progression. And it's something that we as Dungeon Masters can stumble over enough that it needs to be said here on the show for you.
No, this is horse shit. What? My players have gotten to like one of the most important temples in their game. And they used the spells Invisibility and Windwalk to walk by fucking everything. They just...
That's great.
And somehow they talked me into believing that if they walk into an anti-magic field, they can still be the way they are because they had it cast outside the field before they entered.
That's not how that works, I don't think, at all.
No, that's not at all how it works. They should have popped right out.
But yeah.
No, it's gone.
But I realized...
Because I lost a character for that, and if it was ruled wrong, I'm going to be pissed. I jumped on top of a beholder once, and I don't remember, I had a buff or something on my barbarian, and it fizzled instantly when I jumped on the bastard. Ryan, it was your fault.
And now my Inner's Rules lawyer is going, wait a second, you were on top of the beholder, therefore not in front of its...
No, I jumped on it. I jumped on it and grabbed it by its big eye.
Okay, that's different.
So I was literally in its cone. And I was like, that was stupid.
Now I remember one time we basically shortchanged the entire session by over an hour. Like, so our goal is to break into this wizard's tower and steal an item, right? Yep. Okay, wizard, cast invisibility on me. I'm going to cast passive without trace on myself because I'm an arcane trickster.
Got it. Players breaking everything.
That's the beauty of what you're saying. Yeah,
it is. I was trying to figure out where this was coming from. I was like, okay, none of them know Windwalk. Where's that coming? Wait a minute. One of them earned a ring of Summon the Genie, or a Genie. And it's a legendary item.
Yep.
But they found it was just a random roll. And the genie can do that.
Yep.
But they can only stay for an hour before they disappear. So they use plane shift to shift to like her native plane where they did a whole long rest. but they didn't kill the mage that they were fighting in the first place, and she used ascending to warn everybody in the fire temple. It's like, hey, they just used this. They're probably going to come back. We should get ready for that.
Yep.
They did that, and they ran into a glyph ward of dispel magic, and the genie disappeared.
Bye, bitch!
I know I mentioned before, but now flashing back to in the game of Pathfinder, where we went to a mansion, which had three basement levels as part of a dungeon, and we found that out right away. I'm like, really? Shape stone on the floor, shape stone on the floor, shape stone on the floor. Bomb level!
That's awesome. All right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by being well-rounded! What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
Be open to trying new things.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm round.
Yeah. RPGs are a game of endless possibility, and the best way to get the most out of them is to be open to trying new things. Stepping outside of your comfort zone.
Yep.
Don't be afraid to take risks and try new approaches and challenges. You know, a well-rounded character in your RPG is also more interesting from a roleplay perspective as well. They all will have more dimensions to their personality and their background, and which can make for a more engaging and immersive role-playing experience. That being said,
yeah,
it's important to note that a well-rounded character doesn't necessarily mean a character who is equally skilled in every area. It's okay to have strengths and weaknesses.
Yep.
As long as you have a good balance of abilities that allow you to contribute to the party in a meaningful way. Please don't be that person that specializes in the one thing that'll come up once.
Yep.
Don't do that. Because then you put more pressure on the DM to make sure they're going out of their way to include that. And you're useless the rest of the time.
Yep. And I think that's a good point to make, too, because I've definitely encountered some people, and just some people with the mindset of, well, I made a flawed character because I think that makes my character interesting. I'm like, yeah, but your character's useless.
It's interesting, but worthless. What do you think, B?
I think I have a few players that can learn from this.
Yeah. So if you're in Brandon's game, you should be listening to this. If you're not in Brandon's game, why aren't you in Brandon's game watching this show?
Yep.
Matter of fact, he doesn't even do social media or anything. So it's okay. He's never going to find out. It's like making fun of Amish people. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
He has a fighter, Goliath fighter, but his whole spiel is that he's a blacksmith. So every session he's trying to make something. It's like, okay, cool. Because he's got a mobile blacksmith station with him on a wagon.
Did you let him have that?
I did.
Well, there you go.
And it's funny because it's the Spelljammer campaign. So they have the Spelljammer. It's like, how can you get on the ship? It's like, oh, I don't really know.
Build a ladder.
Is there a bay door? Like, there is. Like, can I get in the ship? Maybe. Give me some rolls. He didn't figure out how to get up there, but it's always, every session is, I want to make this, I want to make this, I want to make this. Like, you realize there's only a very limited amount of weapons you can make, right?
Yeah. But that fabricate's a good spell to kind of reference to be able to figure some of that out.
Ooh.
All right, so yeah, good balance of abilities and contribute in a meaningful way.
Be a team player.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
I remember a flashback to one time where in a game I played years ago where a guy basically built a rogue who made his high stat charisma. And made dexterity their dumb stat, and specialized in etiquette for their main skill. And they tried to convince everything we encountered by etiquette. It's like, dude, it's a swamp beast or a golem. It doesn't give a crap about etiquette.
This is what I think of your etiquette. Throw a pile of poo at it. All right.
Ew.
I think that'll do it for our player tip of the day.
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by listening to these weirdos.
Being well-rounded.
I am a shape. Round is a shape.
Potato.
Potato. All right, so before we close out, I want you to know, we are just a couple weeks from episode 300. Oh my gosh.
Ha-hoo! Ha-hoo! Ha-hoo!
I love it. Now, we will be looking back at some of our favorite moments on the show. I hope you guys are thinking and listening back to some of them, documenting them so you don't show up. Oh, I don't know. I'm listening to this stuff. We've been around a lot.
Yep.
We've really been around the block. Like, I feel like some Never mind what I feel like.
Oh my god.
So anyways, we're going to be talking about some of our favorite moments on the show, and we would love to hear from you. What are some of your favorite moments and topics as well? So please email them to us or message them to us on social media. You can send them. Let us know, what are your favorite Crit Academy moments? You know, we want to hear, because we have our moments, but you're the ones that have been following us. You're still listening, I guess you've been following us for years. If you're just starting, welcome.
Yeah. My favorite moments may involve hot sauce, just saying.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, two of those.
Blew out my innards.
It's good. I got a whole bunch of hot sauce bottles for Christmas. They're really good.
And then there was that Flatlayer stuff I gave you that one time.
Yeah.
Ooh, Brent's never had that.
I'm pretty sure my heart's still not beating. All right, so that'll do it for our show today.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed the show and you want to show your support, please do. Hit the little bell, ring the little bell, hit the subscribe button, visit CritAcademy.com, pick out some of our fantastic loot, especially since you will hopefully not be purchasing anything from the company that shall not be named for a while. Follow us on social media. Please leave us a review on wherever you're at. Just, you know what, tag us in a comment when you have something interesting related to D&D, or if you don't, just gaming in general. Maybe I'll respond. I like that stuff.
Yep.
I did want to do that plug for Andrew. I think they said that they like make the little dice potion bottles and stuff,
uh-huh.
And they're doing a giveaway, and the ticket for the giveaway is your cancellation email from D&D Beyond.
You can follow over on our Discord, I think, is where Andrew was talking about that.
Is that what?
Yes.
I don't remember.
So come join our Discord, too. We talk a lot of fun. So
we took a lot of crap on there. It's great.
Yeah, it is pretty glorious. All right, that'll do it for our show today. I know. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.